Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. If you live in Northumberland County, surely there have been times when you were standing in the sunshine and looked north, only to see dark clouds of a storm. And you may wonder, is it going to come here or is it just going to pass by? The recent headlines coming out of Peterborough related to the opioid crisis facing that community are shocking. In a single weekend in early June, 13 people overdosed and two died within a 72-hour period. Deputy Chief Timothy Ferguson said in an interview with CBC he hasn't seen anything like it in his 33 years in policing. Politicians, the director of the health unit, activists, and members of the community have been involved in trying to stem the tsunami of fentanyl, oxycontin, morphine, heroin, and codeine, not to mention the stronger and more deadly versions like carfentanil that are crashing down upon them. Earlier this week, Belleville's police chief called for a national task force. It could be said we are surrounded by dark clouds. As Peterborough, Belleville, and other cities across the province struggle to find solutions, what is going on in rural Ontario, especially places like Northumberland. Over the upcoming weeks, Consider This hopes to explore the issue of opioids in the community through the eyes of those directly impacted. Today, we embark on this examination by looking through the lens of those who uphold the law. I am so pleased to have with me in the studio two members of the Coburg Police Force to shed some light on this incredibly complex subject. I would like to welcome Deputy Chief Paul Vandergraaf and Acting Sergeant Jay Salisbury. Thanks for being on Consider This, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Deputy Chief, let's start with you. How would you characterize the situation involving opioids from the perspective of the Coburg Police Force?
Well, from the Coburg Police Service, it's something that our officers and Acting Sergeant Salisbury will speak to. It's something that our officers are facing every shift. It's not a one-off. It's not a once in a while. It's every shift. The issues of opioids are confronting the men and women of our police service daily. So it is something that's obviously, as you said in your preamble there, that's something that every community is struggling with. And as I've said many, many times, we are not going to arrest ourselves out of this problem. So there has to be a real holistic response to this.
So let's just understand, when you talk about every day, what are the range of kinds of things? Now, maybe you can answer this, or maybe Jay, you can speak to this. What are the range of things that you're encountering? I mean, it's not just an overdose every time. That it breaks down into a number of different situations. Maybe, Jay, you could explain what you encounter.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you're most definitely right. It's not an overdose every day. That's not something we're experiencing. But it directly affects and influences people in so many different ways. And a lot of crime really is derived from the opioids. The addiction is so strong, people need means to fuel that addiction, and a lot of the time they turn to crime in order to fuel that addiction. If someone has an overdose, they may be under the influence of the opioid narcotic, and that's obviously caused them, you know, to act in some sort of disorderly manner and put themselves at risk or put the public at risk, and then the police get involved.
So have you ever had to administer naloxone, the drug that alleviates an overdose?
Several times. Over the last couple of years, I've lost count.
Is that right? Can you remember or recall at least a recent case where you've had to help someone who has overdosed? Can you describe what happened?
Yeah, just about a month ago, we were dispatched to attend the canteen area down at Coburg Beach. The dispatch came in as an emergency medical service assist, so ambulance needed assistance from police in this call. It was a suspected opioid overdose, and it was called in as VSA, which is vital sign absent. So I arrived first on scene. EMS paramedics were just about 10, 15 seconds behind me. I knew they were behind me really close, so I was first on scene. And it's one of those things where it's a really big adrenaline jump at the start. The person that you find a lot of the time, if they have overdose, they look to be dead, to be honest. About 15 or 20 seconds went by, and before he took his first breath, the heart rate really, it slows down. It's very faint. It's hard to detect. So it's literally watching someone die in front of your eyes when you first arrive on scene. You have to jump into action. You have to, you know, consider your own safety, consider the public safety. There's a lot of different factors you have to take into consideration. And once, you know, if you've got the information from hopefully someone that's on scene or that was with them, and you draw the conclusion that it was a suspected opioid overdose, then we can administer Narcan. And watching the effects of Narcan more times than I can count now, it's a pretty incredible thing.
How does that impact you beyond the incident? I mean, to literally watch somebody on the ledge of death, or maybe even passing over, and then you're bringing them up. How does that impact you after the shift or after the incident?
It takes a long time to come down. Your adrenaline is so high, and I mean, literally with someone's life in your hands and their life depends on your next move and your action, it's hard to come down from. It's extremely stressful. It's extremely dangerous in a lot of different aspects. It's not something that I would wish on anyone.
Now, that's just one. That's one of the most recent incidents. What has been the most scary or the most disturbing incident you've come across? You've said you've had multiple incidents. What has been the most scary or the most disturbing to you over your time dealing with this?
Just being there alone and having EMS a ways out and knowing that what you do is, you know, could potentially save this person's life or the person could die in front of you. So that's a pretty scary, dangerous thing. The most disturbing, it's not something that I really like to talk about. I was successful once in bringing a young gentleman back using Narcan that had overdosed. He was on the brink of death, and we went back for a second time, and he was revived by myself and another officer the second time, and it was shortly thereafter that he didn't make it. Our officers were dispatched a while later, and I recognized the name, and he didn't make it for the third time. It's when someone doesn't make it and you don't have anyone else there with you, it's pretty disturbing. It's hard to get through.
Wow. Wow. So, Paul, then from an administrative point of view, then what stresses does this put on the police force when you hear stories like this being told of officers having to intervene on these kinds of things? I mean, this is not what we imagine when officers are out. We imagine tickets and drug busts and stuff like this and those kinds of incidents. What price does it play?
Yeah,
does the force
just
pay?
Sitting here listening to Jay speak today, you know, it puts chills up your spine because it's the impact. When you said like the impact of opioids on the community, it's hard to really put in a tangible way what that impact is, because this is impacting families. This is an addiction based issue. This is impacting emergency service personnel. Fire are sometimes there first. EMS are there sometimes first. Sometimes police are there first. So we look at the residual effect of this, and to have our officers respond to these calls and have this call end positively in most cases, in that the person is assisted, they come from their overdose state, they get assistance through medical, get taken to the hospital, and then to have the officers expected to go on and do the next call. And the impact that opioids has is it's invasive. It's horribly invasive, and it truly affects what it is we can really, really do. So that's where it's not a one person problem. It's not a bylaw problem. It's not an amendment to the criminal code problem. It's really got to be all hands on deck to get ahead of this.
But the other aspect of it, though, is, you know, you just mentioned a number of emergency services that get called to these kinds of calls. So there's a lot of resources, both time, money, and personnel that go into this kind of response. And also, too, it's a different aspect of policing that we're talking about. This is, as I mentioned earlier, this is not tickets. This is not drug enforcement. This is not application of law. This is emergency services. I would imagine a paramedic doing this. I would imagine
absolutely.
A doctor doing this, not a police officer. What does it say to us as a community that our law enforcement officers are actually performing life-saving measures in this particular manner? I know that you do other things to save people's lives, but this is a little bit outside of that, I would
say.
So how do you as a police force then start? How does that change how what you guys do?
Well, recognizing we saw this problem coming our way, like the train was on the tracks and it was coming fast from the West Coast. So the province was addressing how are we going to deploy naloxone in the community? How, what's it going to look like? There was an opportunity we had with our service. We just went out and bought it. We just put it on our officers' tool belts. We often look at the officers in their vests and their cars and their gun belts. It's one giant toolkit. So we wanted to ensure our officers, at least here in Cobourg, had the all the tools we could put on their belt. We wanted to get it on their belts. So it's changed what policing looks like. And when young people or people are considering joining policing, they really need to understand what it is that our officers every day face. And if it's not the actual cases that Jay's talked about, it's responding to families who have nowhere else to turn because one of their loved ones has gone down this road of a fentanyl addiction. And it may not be in our community. Maybe that person has moved to a community somewhere else and they're and mums and dads or sisters or brothers are far afield really worried about their loved one who is struggling from an addiction-based issue. And so it completely changed the way we do our business. I need help. The police service needs help from the community at large. We appreciate what you're doing here. Next time you see an officer on the street, recognize that, yeah, you may get a ticket, but recognize what everything is we're doing. It was a long time ago since I served on the road, but occasionally you had to provide CPR to somebody. Mm-hmm. Usually in winter when somebody, as maybe as old as I am now, is out there shoveling snow. But I'm telling you, now it's a different world.
Let's talk about some of the statistics to go with this.
Sure.
Maybe can we paint a picture for the audience of just how much is going on from the, and this is just one perspective.
Yeah.
This is, doesn't cover everything, but it's from your perspective. So could you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. So statistics are always something I'm really cautious in using, but because a lot of times our officers will get dispatched to a call that'll be an opioid-based call, but they'll clear it as providing assistance to the family. They'll clear it in a variety of ways, but specifically coded in 2018, we had 59 calls for an overdose. This is a specific call type. This isn't somebody who may be struggling. This is somebody who is in a state of an overdose where our officers are dispatched to provide assistance. Now, this is not the ones that we don't get, that particular maybe there's an overdose in the community and somebody is smart enough to call ambulance direct or they're smart enough to take them right to the hospital. I'm talking the times we, as police, were dispatched, 59. And unfortunately, in that year, in 2018, we had 6 people succumb to an overdose. We're a small community, so that is, to my opinion, tragic. We're halfway through the year, and I'm sad to say we're on course to exceed last year, so we're already at 30 at the end of June, overdose calls. And to put it into perspective, there was 24 in 2017. So it is on a rise. If I'm looking here, I'm at my statistics in front of me, the ages range from 19 years old to 57 year olds. So this knows no, it's not a kid thing, it's not an old person thing, this is a person issue. Like the ages, males and females, I'm gonna, just by looking at it, it looks to be 50-50, maybe 60-40, leaning towards males. And it is just, it's just truly, truly tragic that we have these numbers. And I'm looking at the deployment of Narcan, like in one particular case, 2 doses. Jay's spoken about the amount of doses sometimes that we deploy. And this is, I don't want to say the tip of the iceberg, but there is more below the surface than what these numbers depict. But this is what we can have tracked, and we are tracking it far differently for 2019 moving forward, obviously.
So that's really, I think that's what is probably the most shocking about these numbers. We're not talking about emergency room visits. You're not tracking
that.
You're not tracking people who maybe they have a naloxone kit and they save somebody that nobody ever finds out about. So we really don't get a full picture, but this at least tells us from
And I'll give you an anecdote. Yep. One of our recent drug search warrants that was conducted in town, when the officers went through their investigative process, obtained a search warrant, effected the search warrant, made a few arrests. What was alarming to me when I reviewed the reports was the comment from the forensic identification officer did the photographs that there were more than 10 used kits on the floor. I'm going to leave it for impact. More than 10 times Narcan was deployed by somebody in that house to save somebody else, and emergency services weren't contacted.
How did we get here?
is a really important question. Now, we talked earlier in my introduction, I talked about fentanyl, I talked about OxyContin, morphine, heroin, codeine, carfentanyl. How does this begin with people? Because you gave us a bit of a demographic profile, and it's very diverse. This is not one economic class. This is not.
Nope.
These are men, women, a entire age range. So, how did we get here? Like this isn't the typical profile that one associates with drug use and this kind of thing. Can you explain that?
Well, you know, it wasn't but a decade ago that we were really concerned about the oxys and the thefts from pharmacies and the street level oxycodone. I think we've gotten here. I think the folks in BC are better able to show us they're just a few. Unfortunately, the four poor folks in Surrey are just that much farther ahead of us, and that seemed to be ground zero, I think, for Canada. I am by no means an expert, but we got here in a multitude of ways. There's always been addiction. Addiction is a horrific thing that affects communities, people's families, and so that is to a point of start. But to listen to the retired fire chief from Surrey, BC, talk not a month ago, he talked about laneways. Into if we're going to have a true effect on addressing this, we got to look at what lane was this particular person in that caused them to enter into addictions. And they were really surprising in some of their studies in British Columbia that one of the laneways was construction workers, and not because any person's stereotype of construction workers. Actually, they linked it to workplace injury. So you had somebody who was working hard on the street in these types of hot weather, and they had a workplace injury, and as a result, they were prescribed painkillers that were the opioid class, and through managing chronic pain or ineffective management of chronic pain or whatever, they saw people who lives were just destroyed what was started off with an injury at a workplace.
Jay, when you go out on a call and you arrive and you're in these situations, are you ever surprised by the person who is in trouble? I mean, you know, we've been talking about the different types of people. What's been your response when you come upon these people to find different kinds of people? Can you maybe describe what you think about that?
Yeah, sometimes it's shocking. You never know until you get on scene who you're going to be dealing with or who might have overdosed. And as the deputy was saying, it can range from, you know, someone in their mid-teens to someone in their late 50s. Sadly enough, Cobourg being a small town, a lot of the time when we get to an overdose, we recognize the person. We've dealt with them before. They may have previously been, you know, arrested by us on something else, but they're normally known to us.
Now, what about the people that are surrounding them, the family, the friends, those who are at the event? What kind of reactions do you see from them?
It's a lot of the time it's sheer terror and devastation. The terror in the fact that they basically just watched their family member or loved one die in front of their eyes. There's nothing that they can do. If they've been trained in how to use Narcan and they've administered it, then it's just a matter of time. Sometimes it doesn't take effect right away. It may be 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes before the Narcan might take effect. So essentially that loved one or family member is watching the person that they love die before their eyes, and they're completely helpless. It's frustrating for them. They know that their family member has an addiction and they can't do anything about it.
It's just tragic. And on that note, I think it's a good time. We're going to take a break. I'm talking to Deputy Chief Paul Vandegraaff and Acting Sergeant Jay Salisbury. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. My guests today are Deputy Chief Paul Vandegraaff and Acting Sergeant Jay Salisbury, and we're talking about opioids in our community. Paul, other police departments, and I'm thinking about Peterborough right now, have described the situation in the community as a crisis. How would you describe the situation locally?
I don't know that I would use the word crisis. But as we spoke earlier, the numbers speak for themselves. Now, as Jay indicated, we are dealing with the same person a few times in these. However, it is definitely something that we have to put our minds to, or it will be a crisis. And We did speak about Chief Gignac and Belleville talking about a task force, a national task force. I would support him in his initiative in that we have to get ahead of this. Right now we're behind and we're chasing it. So
when you talk about, you know, the scale of we're not in a crisis yet, at what point does this thing flip over and start to be a crisis?
It's probably the word I hate the most, is this crisis word. But because if I'm one of these 59 people, or if I'm one of the family members of these 59 people right now, I'm really mad at the deputy chief for saying maybe we're not in a crisis, because for these folks, it's a crisis. For Jay and his peer group that are responding to the calls for service, they're going to say it's a crisis. That being said, I feel we're managing it, that we have our emergency services well trained. They work really well together. We know who our people are generally in our community, and the community is starting to chat about this. So I define crisis, and I would probably agree with you that, sure, I'm like Chief Farquharson and I believe we're in a crisis. But at the end of the day, I think we're talking about it. So that's really important.
So then how do we start down the path to addressing this problem? Because I mean, you know, we're doing what, you know, Jay here has described. He's doing his thing. The fire department, the ambulance, the emergency services are doing theirs, the health unit, the hospital, you know, the addiction counseling people. Everybody's playing a role. But how do you see us starting down the path to address this?
It's like any other problem that we face in policing. We have to evaluate what our issue is. We have to know, like, what BC is doing. Try to figure out how is it that these particular numbers, these people are becoming exposed to us through this type of call for service. We have to evaluate how we're responding. We have to intercede. Drug enforcement's important. Don't think for a moment that we can't affect change through enforcement. And we will, and we do. And our current police services board has made that their number one priority in moving forward is drug enforcement. And we've had some great success very recently with some search warrants globally. We have to recognize this isn't a COVID problem. This is a Northumberland County problem. This is a province of Ontario problem. So all the players need to get to the table. And we have to start thinking about harm reduction as one big piece. We have to look that there is a harm to our community. We have these people who we need to reduce harm to them and harm to the rest of the society. We have to do enforcement. We have to do education. And we have to evaluate how it is we've got here and where we're going. And it has to start, and it has to be all hands on deck, like I said earlier. It's not a police problem. It's not an EMS problem. We all own a piece of this, including the folks who are living this, who are walking this world. And we have to, as police officers, recognize that some people struggle with addictions, and we have to maybe get off of our enforcement side and recognize that and move to a harm reduction side.
Jay, when he talks like this, how do you see your role? What do you see when you're out there doing your job as being how do you address it as an individual officer, I guess is what I'm asking you?
First thing that comes to mind is just, it's pure frustration. I mean, we can put a dent in the supply. We can cut off the supply lines for a short time, but it's a business for a lot of people. It's a very profitable business for a lot of criminals. There's big money in it. We cut the head off the snake and another one moves right in, right? We can cut the supply line and someone else is gonna take over. So you can stop it for a short period, but it's gonna keep on coming. You can make the arrests, you can put the offenders behind jail. You can work hard to get people the help that they need, the people who are addicted. But it's frustrating because it's very much a never-ending revolving cycle. You put a dent in it, and it gets bigger.
So, Paul, when we're talking about the enforcement side, can you explain how these drugs get into our community? Because as you described, this is not necessarily being manufactured here or being created here. I mean, it comes from elsewhere, and how does that system work?
Jay was probably more eloquent than I'll be, but really bad people take advantage of vulnerable people in our community. They, just as he said, they swoop in from other jurisdictions, peddle their poison, take advantage of addictions, take advantage of vulnerable situations and vulnerable people. And by vulnerable, maybe taking advantage of a debt load that person's carrying and having them offset debt load by peddling more drugs. And the minute we take those people, those disadvantaged people away and arrest and charge them, there's somebody else coming down the 401 with more stuff. There's somebody else coming up from Lake Ontario. Like, it comes from every which way. And I've been doing this for over 28 years, and the revolving door of arresting this drug dealer, another one comes right into the game, and that has never changed. So without sounding too cynical, we have had very positive impact, but we have to, again, that's where harm reduction goes. We understand that there are these yeah, I could use lots of language, but there's lots of people who want to take advantage of our people in our community, and we have to get at them, and that's where a task force, a national task force, looks at that. That's where the province is doing great work. We work really well with our Northumberland OPP and with Port Hope Police Service. These folks know no boundaries. They don't care what the sign says when they drive into a community. They know that someone's going to peddle $5,000 worth of this garbage to vulnerable people in our community, and they're gone before the peddling even begins.
Now, are they coming from large centers like Toronto, GTA, Peterborough, Belleville, Ottawa, Montreal? Where is it coming from?
Yes. Mostly?
All of that. Okay.
I'm not going to say they're just coming from GTA because that's too easy.
Okay.
I'm not going to say they're just coming from Montreal because that's too easy. It's coming into our communities from the east, west, and I even use the south. It's coming from the south. It's coming from in all different ways at us.
In terms of the strategies, I mean, we're a rural community. We're not an urban community. What difference does that make in terms of how we approach this problem from law enforcement compared to, say, large urban centers like Toronto, like Peterborough, like Belleville?
Again, we have to look at it from a more grassroots level, in that we know it's coming into our community instead of being, maybe, as you say, manufactured in our community or wholesale distributors, if you will, to borrow an expression. So we understand that people come, leave their garbage behind, and they're gone, and then we're left to pick up the pieces. That's why I think, let's pick up the pieces. Let's get those supports for those people in our community who are being taken advantage of, and that's where we need to look at harm reduction as a philosophy, in that we need to understand that people live this way for a variety of reasons, start focusing our attentions there, as well as cutting the head off the snake. And it couldn't have been said any better. We got to continually cut the head off the snake each and every time. However, the old simple crime prevention theory is going to come into place, that the more pressure we put on the snake here, the snake will slither somewhere else. So that's where Chief Gignac in Belleville is wise to say what he said, in that we have to get on the same page, because we're just going to move the problem from here back to Peterborough or from here back to Durham.
So do you stay in touch then with Port Hope and Northumberland OPP and work on this cooperatively?
Absolutely. Our officers in the criminal investigation side, they work together weekly. The most recent arrest made was a joint Port Hope Police Service, a Coburg Police Service event. Our members sit on the Criminal Intelligence Service of Ontario, where they have quarterly meetings where our officers speak with intelligence or drug-related officers across the province, and they come and talk about and share best practices. And the province does provide funding. There's currently grants that have been written, and we're waiting for decisions on these types of things. So I'm not saying the province isn't doing their piece. They are. But it's a multi-layered piece. We're dealing with this. Just think of the poor folks in the GTA who are dealing with this issue. Oh, and the guns and gangs.
Well, interesting. I read an article about a small hamlet in Saskatchewan that it has an opioid crisis, and literally a population of 5,000 and a huge percentage are have an addiction issue. And I guess in talking to the Northumberland OPP, do you see this, or maybe Jay, through talking to your colleagues, do you see this impacting not just us as a town, but into smaller places like Bewdley, like Baltimore, like Grafton, and Brighton, I'm thinking now, and Colborne? Are we just limited to urban settings, and how is it impacting? Are you hearing anything about that?
Not at all. It's across the board, like the deputy said earlier. It's not a small town thing. It's not a big city thing. It's a nationwide thing. It's fairly new to some small communities, and it's very shocking when it hits. It's not something that they've seen before. So when a small community starts seeing some overdoses and starts seeing the presence of, you know, heroin or fentanyl, it's fairly new, and that's extremely shocking to a lot of people. But it's not a small town thing. It's not a big city thing. It's evenly across the board.
Paul, I know you attended a national conference recently where there were a number of panels on opioids. What were the takeaways? I know you talked, one was the laneways, one of the things, but can you talk more a bit about what you learned and what you brought back?
Well, the biggest thing that I learned, again, was from the folks in British Columbia, and my heart truly does go out to all service providers out there, because they've been fighting this war for at least 5 years. And what I really took from what I heard was not chasing the snake and trying to cut its head off all the time, but trying to recognize what brought, and doing a better job at recognizing what brought the person to this point of being an overdose or worst case scenario of fatality, and start asking the questions of these deaths, not as an overdose, but see them as a series of events that led to a particular death, and asking the questions of the family members to try to figure out what was the entry point for this particular person in this crisis or into this addiction. And then when we can start identifying those points, like the construction workers, that was this, I've been to lots of conferences, but that was so salient for me. That just hit me. That could be my son who works in the hospitality industry, who if he was hurt and they prescribed opioids, I tell you right now, I would be telling them to suck it up and take Tylenol, because it can happen to anybody. So that was the biggest takeaway for me, is that we have to manage the current issue, and we are. And we have great officers like Jay, and they're all out there doing what they do every day. And we're going to do that well. And we're going to provide all the support we can for that. But we got to get ahead of this, and we've got to get back and try to find where the entrance is to this highway and start closing them.
So one of the strategies, the reduction strategies that seems to come up in a lot of the literature, they talk about prevention, treatment, harm reduction, and enforcement. Those are the four pillars. Prevention is something I know that the Colbert Police Force prides itself in the number of programs it runs in terms of being in connection with the community.
Right.
What are some of the things, how does that translate from your experience in working with the community and doing this prevention work and the opioids? Is there any particular programs that you could talk about where you're actually building these bridges? I know you were at an event earlier today that was like that. I mean, can you talk a bit about how those programs that you're doing tie into this notion of prevention?
We just launched a program, and we haven't had a chance to really, we did a pilot that's called the CAPES program, and we brought the education to all levels of schools. So a very different drug education message to kindergartners, to grade 5, to grade 9, to grade 12. And that's where we are going to continue to move in the future school year, is that we're going to be delivering the education pieces to all levels at different levels, so that we can talk openly about drug addiction. And addiction has to be seen as a common cold. It has to be seen as something that can be beat, something that can be recognized and that we can support. We're really lucky in Northumberland County, the resources that exist here. So we partnered with Rebound for the Coburg Under 12 initiative, so we can identify kids under the age of 12 who are either through truancy or through behavior issues in school or through some family crisis, that we can start streaming them to Rebound with trained experts who can start working on literacy, can start working on parental skills for moms and dads, partnering with the YMCA. So we can create an environment when we see the entry point for addiction and these opioids, that we've got the resources and there's trust. Right now, we have to do a lot more work in building trust with our youth so that they can feel comfortable and going to a police officer or a firefighter, or a paramedic, and maybe just saying, you know what, I think I'm in real trouble here. The fact that I hear today from Jay, and I've known it statistically, that they've deployed Narcan to the same person twice. The fact that the cruisers all haven't been parked and they're just throwing their hands up is a credit to the men and women of our service.
You were at an event earlier today where...
Yeah, the golf camp.
but this is out of the program that you just talked about with Rebound and the YMCA. Yeah, so could you just talk about that so that people see how that works on the ground?
This is great. It's third year. Sergeant Bellmer is the lead on this. But what this was is we partnered with the YMCA 3 years ago, created a golf camp. It's 1 week. We have the Y try to find those vulnerable youth in our community who could use some real positive self-esteem and some positive role modeling. And we create an opportunity where 14 or 15 strangers come together at the Cobra Creek Golf Course on a Monday. They work together through all sorts of leadership. And then at the end of the day, the deputy gets to burn hamburgers for them. And to see the change over the week where these kids were stood off in their various corners and really didn't communicate with each other, didn't know each other. And there were kids from high socioeconomic backgrounds and kids from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. But today at the barbecue, they were the golf camp kids. And they had a really positive response with one of our special constable, Mitchell Cairns, who joined the team this year. There's an Irish police officer who's been coming because the program is so strong. He takes holidays and flies from Ireland to volunteer with the program. And then Mark's commitment. The Y just takes good care of us and makes us look really seamless because they're just that good at it. And the 14 kids today now know Constable or Sergeant Bellmer as Mark. they know James is James, and Jay's shift was through the barbecue today talking to them, and to see the youth had no problem stopping these officers, having a quick chat, telling them about their golf score or whatever it was. It's just one thing, but we got to keep that momentum going on and on and on.
Jay, you're on the front line with this kind of stuff. When you see programs that are involved in programs like this, does it make a difference from your perspective as dealing with, as I said, the front line?
100%, yeah. The deputy talked about the CAPES program. Myself and a couple other officers were directly involved in that, and I had the opportunity to, it was at CR Gummo last year, so I had the opportunity to deliver the drug presentation to from kindergartners up to grades 6, 7, and 8. And I saw personally it opened the doors. They felt free to and comfortable to ask a police officer who's got firsthand experience questions that they've had that they haven't been comfortable asking anyone else. We got to open their eyes, and I'll tell stories of personal experience, and everyone in that room is just glued to me. Some of the stories that I told, and I was pretty bold, chins hit the floor. The kids couldn't believe it. They'd never been told that before, and I think it's very valuable that they hear firsthand experience as to how dangerous some of these drugs are, what they cause, and how devastating it can be. So being involved in that CAPES program, the prevention and the education side of things, I think it's invaluable.
Does it give you hope?
It does. Yep, the next generation coming up, I think they're going to have a lot more education than the current generation that wasn't educated the same way when it comes to drugs and drug effects and drug abuse and addiction.
I'm going to jump in here. It's therapy, you know. When you hear young officers like Jay who get a chance to be in the front line, save people's lives, get caught in the, oh my God, not another, to delivering a message. I think it's one way in which our officers can actually help deal with the internal devastation it creates inside them, that you can get caught in the cynical loop in policing very easy, but to parlay the message forward like Jay and lots of others, many of our officers have done, I akin it to therapy for the officers.
Do you think safe injection sites are a solution?
Personally, it has to be managed well. But I definitely think it's a solution worth considering.
There was a recent article in Atlantic Magazine where they talked about a frightening trend where fentanyl is being taken by people with their friends around, and they deliberately overdose, trying to get as close to death as possible and then have someone pull them back with naloxone. It sounds like a version of the movie Flatliners. What does that make you think when you hear that that's a possible trend that's coming up?
It's alarming, to use a simple word, horribly alarming. But
anger. It's frustrating.
Yeah,
you're playing Russian roulette. I mean, a lot of these people have no idea just how deadly and potent some of these things are. I mean, it could be a matter of a couple of grains that's capable of killing you. And naloxone isn't going to work every time.
And also, I understand that you never know just how much fentanyl is ever in anything or carfentanil. So it,
exactly. Yeah.
Okay. You talked about you support a national task force. What about a local task force? Do we need a local task force?
Again, we need to get the players to the table.
So who's going to do that, though? Who's going to do that? I agree. It sounds like something that people would agree with. I'm saying I agree, but it sounds something that makes sense. Who's going to call that meeting?
I've had conversations with counselors. I've had conversations with our police services board. I know there's some things I hope that are growing that'll be kicking off in the early part of fall here. And I know the county's working on trying to bring together the partners on a more harm reduction piece. Recently, we've completed grant applications to look at some of these ideas and some educational pieces. So the gauntlet is before us, and I do believe it's been picked up. I just don't want to take anybody else's thunder. I have might be some inside information about some things that might be coming, but I do believe that the Cobra Council is looking and will be considering some sort of discussion point, if nothing else. And I know the county has been for the last 2 months trying to coordinate schedules to get the players to the table. And the fact that it's coming from three or four different ways, Chief of EMS Paramedic Chief Detler and I have been talking about this for a couple of years. And so we're at a position now where it's incumbent upon the leaders of our community, and I'm lucky to consider myself as one, is to stand up for the people and stand up for our frontline personnel.
I want to thank both of you for coming in today, and in particular, Jay, thank you for coming in and sharing your insights from the front line.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next week, join me as our MPP, David Piccini, will be coming on the show. It's been a while since I have had the pleasure to interview him, and I look forward to hearing what he has been up to these past few months. Then the following week, we will return to our series on opioids with the local health unit talking about their efforts. So please tune in. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This, or if you are on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. I will read out a selection of comments on next week's show. If you'd like to listen to this or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy day to listen in, and I hope over the next week you will continue to consider this Northumberland.